indicated that
I was meeting with Oprah Winfrey, known to the young people here,
and that how the Winfrey Academy actually came to be established out of that brainstorming. So even when Nelson Mandela was late, in actual fact, he was not late. So, good morning, honorable committee members, honorable minister, student claims commissioner. Took a short lesson. our officials, stakeholders, and members of the public, we now formally declare the meeting open. I will apologize, the SEC, we have to start without you. You know? I've been asked on Tuesday, coming through to today, to stand in for the chair, Honorable Phumzile Mwenyamabila, who is on official leave due to exams at University of Pretoria. Thank you for that nomination and cooperation over the past 2 days. Today is the last leg. From next week, we expect the honorable chair back on her court seat. The program for the day is in front of us. And we'll go through it as it stands. Safe to say that the briefing by the minister, which is item 4, is now gonna go to anywhere at about 9, somewhere there. And the other change is that item 9 may be struck off, or we may just talk to it to indicate what it is meant to be, so that honorable members can understand that item being struck off. Item 9 on the motion of desirability, because a certain due process first unfolds before that is actually entertained. But it is entertained, but the point at which it is entertained is not yet having said that, then it means our program is as it stands. I do know that we have apologies going to item number 3. I did see an apology going to on behalf of our secretary, or shall I just give the contact to indicate any apology? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, colleagues. I've got an apology from the old question of the ministerial
Honourable Walter.
Chairperson, I have to attend at around 11, I have to attend a free version meeting of a statutory nature as well. So I'll actually move just before we get back.
Honourable Babama and then Honourable Chalamet in that order. Thank you very much. We note those apologies. Just a free valve on our traveling at 2, long before 2, long gone ideal. But we noticed, but probably long, long out of here, I guess. We note all the apologies held forwarded, and therefore we may proceed. But I'll just do a courtesy to indicate on the part of members, Honourable Strike Ralekoma is the whip at sports and recreation, has been given to us to alternate on behalf of members of the ANC who cannot be in attendance. Obviously the chair, and obviously up to now Mamagata is not here, and there were also many other uncertainties. So that the meeting is not short of quorum or participation. So I'll just extend a special word of welcome, Honourable Ralekoma. I know you deal with sport and creation, and please make our sports people a bunch of winners out there. Bafana Bafana here is breathing with the pipes, following some points being deducted and all of that. I don't know if you go as far as the club issues. Steve Pombela is a good journey for more of the kind of. So ask the Kaizer Chiefs people to be a little bit patient then. Well, that's on a light note. The committee side stands as usually it has been. So I just wanted to make that indication so that it's just clarified. I do not know, maybe we can just do the introductions of other role players in the room, or we can do that as we arrive, but let's rather do that so that the meeting is clear about its credentials sort of, right? There's no mic next to you. This is the mere observation.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I am Robert Chamundikasha. I'm the legal advisor from the Ministry of Legal Services. I'm heading in for my health team with the legal advisor in the bill that we discussed today.
Thank you. Yes. No. We're skipping the two regulars. You're so regular. How you wish you can be. We're skipping the.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Isaac Peter. I'm the Sanitary Legal Assistant of the Chief President.
Thank you. Oh, you want me to skip the regular? Continue.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Safan Medivin from Parliament's Legal Services.
I'm the national coordinator of the Alliance for World Democracy and the former director of the National Student Movement of South Africa.
It's not a pleasure, it's a pleasure to see you. You listening? You missed that one. But if you continue to say no. On strike, know that you must code it because Honourable Strike is gonna. No, sorry. What do we do? It's got 4 records. don't know what to do now. And it's not, it's like he's not gonna be working the whole day. I don't know.
No, listen, look, I don't know my
thing. Yeah. Sorry for that. Are you a regular one? Yeah. We apologize for that comment. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure having you, sister. Not pleasure, pleasure. In Parliament, can you see how battling we are? We support that the Parliament votes now be increased.
Mr. Chair, I'm a member of the media from News 24, and I'm a school woman, and I'll also be in and out as far as the current government.
Most welcome, Mr. Hemet. Thank you so much, sir, to have you. Thank you very much, Aike. Thank you very much for the introduction, sir. We have a technician on call.
Technician.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Hemen. We had invited via the parliamentary legal, parliamentary media section, we had invited the media to please bring us because of the importance of what the business is dispensing with today. So thank you very much. We know there's quite a whole range of issues taking place across the country today. Mr. Hemen, you know the latest? There's a march to certain words? Oh, thank you. I guess we have got the introduction of the key components of the meeting.
Oh yeah. No, please, man. We unbanned the ANC and then asked the all operatives to come overboard and not underground. And now we are underground there, sir.
And we have the pleasure of inviting you. Thank you.
President Ben Gavin's Institute for Poverty, Learning and Various Studies, Plant.
The title, so if I downgraded you, hard luck to you, Mr. Luck. Thank you very much for creating our meeting. And, I had earlier proposed that we take item number 4 somewhere towards the bottom, because the backup copies and documentation are still on the way to the minister, and that's it. The committee secretary just whispered to my ear that, so you are referee and player today. I looked at him with open eyes, like, what?
Yeah.
But, I will just invite the indulgence of everyone that you bear with me, because I'll just render only one item. And I guess it's not going to contradict with the duties I'm doing of the meeting, inviting the meeting. Definitely, I can give guarantee there wouldn't be any prejudice suffered because I made a presentation while I was there. The approach, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, is to because this private member's bill have now been pointed at by the chair. I am Muguni. I am introducing now the bill to the committee. I am indicating that the approach for the meeting will really be to introduce the in principle thought behind introducing the bill. What are the objectives? What does it seek to do? I'm non-legal in background and in any other sort, so I will not be reading clause by clause and giving a legal interpretation. But good enough in the room, I am very much satisfied that there are enough legal minds. So basically, for a member to introduce a bill, there's no requirement that he must have LLM, LLP, and studying towards what. So basically, it's just a task of any member of parliament to seek to introduce his or her idea, and then parliament accordingly allocates you a drafter who is a legal person. And for purposes of this, our then allocated Mr. Michael Flynn. He's a renowned drafter in parliamentary drafting circles, and unfortunately, he can't be here today. So all questions of law, to a great extent, emanate from his expertise. But insofar as the thought and everything, and my style to the meeting will just be to go through what then becomes the substance, the essence, the objective of this private member's bill. I am told that a very few private members' bills have seen the light of day. And perhaps I am challenging my colleagues throughout Parliament that we need to really look in that direction and to try and occupy that space. Leading up to this date, following the drafting, I then introduced via the parliamentary processes and via the speakership, I then introduced the memorandum, which was then saying that the stakeholders can make comments and so forth. The programming of Parliament was such that it coincided with the time when we were on constituency break, the whole of March, April. And it was about that time that yourselves and other bodies made submissions, and you kept on pressing for confirmation that your submissions were actually received. Indeed, they were. Ultimately, you had to call me to confirm. I confirm now on record as well that we did receive your submissions from the Chamber of Mines, alongside quite a handful of others. The next step there is then supposed to be from a draft bill, following the publicity period, which we extended about two or three times because there were concerns. There were stakeholders who were then saying, but we are keen to make submissions, but you've given us a period of about 2 weeks. And because we advertised in different media, like there was advertisement in the Gazette. The Gazette, I was made to understand, doesn't just come immediately. You say, Gazette, please circulate this. It might actually take 2 weeks or more. So we extended. I've not brought down the details as to from what date to what date, but from where I sit, I know there would never be a complaint under the sun that the period for submissions was too short. We extended almost double the normal time expected for the draft bill. So we've had to take it right up to May. Following that is then the process in Parliament through which the Speaker refers to the Programming Committee for what is called the first reading debate. And when there was going to be the first reading debate, parties agreed at parties agreed at programming committee that there was a much more urgent debate on the dissolution of parliament. And parties agreed that the members' bill may just go the process. If needs be, it's still within law, you can take a first reading and second reading even at the same time or whatever. Right. So from where I sit, non-legal as I am, I've been very cautious to make sure that all the issues of compliance legally are actually adhered to. And then almost I'm just going to get to the memorandum because that will be my talking template, the memorandum. No PowerPoint presentation, not now, not any other time, sorry. I'm just going to talk to the memorandum. But just a brief background, which I think that the honorable members are very much familiar with. The minister, the chief land claim commissioner, I'll draw it in just my own summary terms. Land claims were open up until 1998. And at the period of closure of that opening, which was just about 2 years, 2.5 years, with about 80,000 claims submitted. The anticipation from where I sit, I'm convinced it is scientific. It's not a science fact. There are professors in the room. I'm convinced it is scientific, and then in the memorandum I'll outline how. The anticipation is that you would have expected anything to the vicinity of 8 million applicants for restitution. But at the time of closure in 1998, only about 80,000. Now, in mathematics terms, that's about 1%. But only 1% that had made submissions. Clearly, it then called and motivated and continues to drive me to say, in principle, if you want to have justice in so far as the question of land and so on, reparation claims and all that, clearly you can't say you have done that at 1%. Like I say, I can demonstrate that I would expect close to 8 million people who were affected by the land dispossession of sorts. Of course, within the confines of the Constitution, I'm talking 1913 hitherto. I would not be talking 1662 because I would then be going way out of the Constitution. I'm just talking 1913 hitherto. Group Areas Act and so forth, forced removals and all sorts. So all those kind of categories and the betterment were then, I then estimate, with some research behind it, I estimated about 7.5 to 8 million, and we only had 80,000. And I may hasten to say, CLPC will be happy and think I sit on the other side now. I may hasten to say, of that 80,000, about 6,600 now remain to be finalized. Right. Okay. Now, I will then invite, yesterday copies were circulated over and above the processes of Parliament. There were processes of Parliament, I just thought I needed to show this. On the 15th of August, under the tabling, answer, you will find that our draft bill is there in two under draft bill, Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill 2017 submitted by PJ Ndumi. It's referred to the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform. And then under the introduction of bills, again, section 3.1A, again, there's that cited in full, Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill, B19 of 2017, National Assembly. It's proposed to be Section 76, and explanatory summary of bill and prior notice of its introduction published in the Gazette number 40774 of 7th of April 2017. I'm just citing that because we're likely going to end up back at some point in court. So that is the process that has been followed hitherto. So it was referred to the committee. I have cited the referral. I will then now go straight to the memorandum. Like I'm saying, I think honourable members and our stakeholders, there are extra copies of the advice. There are extra copies for people who would wish to really have a look. I will not be reading. The memorandum is on page 8, right through to page 10, depending on the font, the printing, and the, you know, but on average, I would say I think some of them to say page 8 to page 10. Right. The objects of the bill are stated there, what it seeks to do. That is one section that I would like to read kind of a verbatim for the reason that it really captures what we are all about here. The object is on the memorandum is item 1, the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill 2017 proposes certain amendments to the Restitution of Land Rights Act of 1994, which is Act Number 22, to extend the date for lodging a claim for restitution to 5 years after the commencement of the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill. 5 year period, please note. To make it an offence to prevent, to obstruct or unduly influence a claimant or any other person from pursuing his or her rights as provided for in the Act. To criminalize the lodgement of fraudulent claims. To regulate the appointment, tenure of office, remuneration and terms of conditions of service. Services of judges of the Land Claims Court, and to further amend certain provisions aimed at promoting the effective implementation of the Act. That one I was reading the verbatim. That's the object of what we seek to do. What I thought Parliament in the country must actually do is contained there in that clause 1. Issues for discussion. Basically, the first standard 2.1 just talks to the NDP, the Vision 2030, and that I just quoted a sentence there. The evaluation indicated that certain deserving persons and communities dispossessed of land rights, of rights in land, as a result of past racially discriminatory laws and practices, did not participate in the process. That's the catch phrase or sentence from that. In other words, these categories who could not lodge claims by 1998, the betterment planning people who were dispossessed there. Basically people like those, yes. Right, going further down, there's an indication in that clause that the restitution process right through to 1998 was inadequate with respect to the whole country and dispossessed people after 1950, being able to lodge their claims. That's what the clause 2.2 seeks to say in the memorandum. Just to sidetrack a bit, prior 1913 falls somewhat outside the scope of the Constitution, because I did discuss this with my lawyer, my drafter, Mr. Michael Prince, at length. That if we were to still remain legal within the ambit of the law,
then it falls prior 1913, although I would have wished for it. You know, my surname is Nguni, no? You know, once you are Nguni, then it means you're interested in history all the way to 1650, everything is Nguni, no? This is African. Okay. So, we're really talking 1913 leadership. We're talking 1913 leadership. The cut-off date is a national consensus up to this point. I'm aware the minister and the PLCC could make indications about the exclusions of certain, I mean, exceptions, thank you. It doesn't mean it's a blind, bold thing. There are exceptions, but there's a different process. So I do not refer myself to that process here. Right. In 2.3, again, it's important just for one to read, so for clarity's sake, it's estimated that at least 3.5 million individuals were forcibly removed from their land as a result of racially discriminatory laws and practices implemented after 1913, especially between 1960 and 1982. Right? Yeah. It has been argued that this figure excludes dispossessions that were caused by betterment planning and homeland consolidation. You remember some time of Katswana, Venda, Kuskai, and many other homelands, Kazan, Ulu, Kwazulu, and so forth. So, all those processes. But please note somewhere there, during the same period, what was during the same period, the figure could be closer to 7.5 million. While less than 80,000 claims for restitution were lodged with the commission before the cut-off date. Now in mathematics, 7.5 million to the nearest digit becomes 8 million. And 80,000 claims, less than 80,000 were lost, means 1%. Means 1%. So there's huge injustice that is facing us if we do not reopen. One argues there, but scientifically than otherwise. Do not, yeah. Now, in 2.4, the idea is to indicate that the 2014 Amendment Act that was nullified by the Constitutional Court, that 2014 had a 5-year period or window period within which the people were to lodge claims. So it was then going to end in 2019. As we all know, and our lawyer put nicely, it is a cause in common that then those claims lost between that period, casually I will refer to them as the frozen claims. Those claims lost in that period, it makes a very tricky legal question. It makes a very, very tricky legal question because the Concord, in striking off that amendment, however, at the same time, protects those claims and those claimants. But those claims and claimants are actually submitted in terms of the 2014 amendment. But the Concord says, we're not going to throw away the child with the bathwater. So it protects those claims, the ones that we now and again referring to as frozen, but that's the language, it's not law. So, I would like to read the 2.4 for a reason. The Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Act of 2014 had sought to reopen the lodgement of claims for the period of 5 years ending 30th of June 2019. However, on 28th July 2016, that's last year, 15 months back, July, August, September, October, I talked about 14 months, we're in the 15th month now. Last year,
in the Concord, in the matter between the Land Access Movement of South Africa and others, addressed as the chairperson of the NCOP and others. It was declared that the National Council of Provinces public participation process was unreasonable and therefore constitutionally invalid. I just want to talk to that briefly. Okay, let me look further. The Constitutional Court held that a failure by one of the Houses of Parliament to comply with a constitutional obligation amounts to a failure by the sum total of Parliament as a whole. Right. The Concord therefore held that the Parliament had failed to satisfy its obligation. I will again invite honourable members and stakeholders to really apply their minds to that provision. That Parliament failed to satisfy its obligation to facilitate public involvement. That's the 2014 attempted amendment. It was an amendment act ultimately, up until it was struck off on the 28th of July last year. I just wanted to talk to that a little bit and not suppose that we are all on the same page. A bill initiated by EXCO, I think it was during the term of the current Honourable Minister, Honourable Bugile Queen, a bill initiated satisfied all the processes in EXCO. And even the Constitutional Court doesn't pick up necessarily an issue. I have the judgment with me, by the way, but nowadays people can just Google, you know, Lamusa and other persons, and then it comes out. Yeah. The Honourable Minister introduces the bill to Parliament, and Parliament largely, Concord says, the NCOP, I had read it, the NCOP failed to fulfill its obligation on public involvement. If you go to reading the judgment delivered by Honourable Maganga, Honourable Judge Maganga, you will see that he even cites certain cases out of the public hearing that were very pathetic, in my way, pathetic. Yeah. And the six-week cycle for NCOP ended up being compromised into a four-week cycle. So, to a great extent, Parliament failed in that sense. So, the Honourable Sultani, welcome, sir. I want to cite you in good faith, and I think I agree with your point. Raised in committee a question when we were briefed about the Concord release. So, can't it start at NCOP? Because the problem was at NCOP. Now, I've done research, I've applied my mind, I have checked that. It's clear that it's either starting straight from the Honourable Minister, all the stages through Cabinet to introduction in the House, or option two, it starts at NA. Put differently, no bill is initiated at NCOP. That's the long and short of it. So, again, it added to my reasons to really make sure that I kickstart or initiate this process. Because you can't then say NCOP in vernacular, NCOP cannot initiate legislation. Thank you. Now, 2.5. Again, just reading. The bill seeks to reopen the lodgement of land claims until 5 years after the commencement of this supposed act by then, right? And in order to comply with the Concord, Constitutional Court, I sometimes call Concord. So, it's a very important one, also for the stakeholders out there, those in media and elsewhere, please capture this if you can. I may not direct you. the reopening is proposed to be for a 5-year term. I just want to talk to that briefly. You would expect that close to 7.5 million that I referred to people would then have a chance in that 5 years to lodge claims. Also drawing from the wisdom of the submission, including by Chamber of Mines, I could not entertain a possibility of opening endlessly. But it could be a debate. Why can't it remain open indefinitely? Because anyone who has a legitimate claim then has a legitimate claim. Why do we have to have time to it? I proposed a 5-year term, Honorable Committee. I am proposing that in processes to ensue, please consider that discussion on the time. If you ask me openly, I'm open-minded about it. Even a 4-year reopening can still do. But being open-minded, I am not so certain that you can leave it worried. Because then you then rehash cycles of claims on claims, claims on claims, that would perhaps even defeat the purpose. So 2.5, like I read, indicates that we seek to open for 5 years, but I'm upfront with the Honorable Committee to say that could be negotiable, and it depends. Obviously, Section 76 of the Minister must have a hearing as recommended. So, there may be negotiations, someone may say, but there was opening from 2014 for some time up until 2016. There will be merit in that submission, but someone will be saying, if you open for anything less than 5 years, remember 1.5 years might be spent establishing systems such as advert and all. And the date of commencement, when the President assents to the bill, is not necessarily the date of the first claim lost. Because from the date the President assents to the bill, I don't know how long it takes before the Honourable Minister is then aware, and then before the Honourable Minister activates his structures via the Commission. For now, Commission is under the Department. So, that process itself might actually sacrifice some time. So that's how I've arrived at 5 years. There is a tricky legal one. One of the issues in 2.6, one of the issues before the Concord was the impact of claims lost in terms of the Amendment Act on those laws prior 1998. Yeah, Concord talk to that. The bill proposed that the Commission first finalize all claims lodged by 31st December 1998, which we call in quotes, open, close quote, all claims, before processing claims lodged in terms of the Amendment Act. This is a very crucial clause standard. And those that might be lodged when the bill is signed, into law. That is the new claim. However, the Commission may, if it is in the interest of justice to so do or to do so, consider new claims, but only in order to ascertain whether a claimant who lodged his or her claim by the 1st December has a valid claim for restitution. Therefore, the bill separates the lodgement of a claim from the processing of the claim. In other words, the Commission could open up in order to see if to really draw wisdom as to whether there is a contestation on a particular thing. Remember, any Commission, any body of law seeks to do justice. You don't want to deal with the minor in isolation. I think that's what that law seeks to say. Then, in 2.7, it's indicated that the all claims, they will not, however, be processed, right? And going further down,
then suggested that the commission must keep a register with particulars of claims lost from 1st July 2014, right? Which register must be open to the public? I think Concord was also applying its mind to the question of priority. And that's the question I was attempting to deal with there also, right? So that it's not like, okay, well, let me just talk to priority because I will not talk to it somewhat below. Anyway. Here the traffic flow. The priority as a phenomenon in society. Here the traffic flowing. And clearly these cars are in front of you in terms of the sequence, in terms of the order. In your mirror you see a car with a red flickering light and a siren. And this car is simply sending a message that is saying, I've got life that is under threat on my head. Can I please have priority? In that context, a sensible driver then gives way to this car because clearly there's a life at stake there. Although in terms of entering our N1, N2, whatever, you were the first one, but you really are sensitive to the fact that there's a life at stake. I'm just trying to define in my own words and in simple words and for the public what priority means sometimes. I have a right, I'm ahead of you, I'm left, stay there. But you become very, very reckless and irrational if you do that, because there's a life at stake. How do you apply it to the to issues about land? How do you apply it there? There will definitely be regulations and other procedures. I'm just talking the sense, the policy persuasions and all. Naturally, the first order is the chronological order. But somewhere it says, if it's in the interest of justice, you want to resettle people there in order that you build a dam, and which dam is going to create 5,000 permanent jobs. If I'm a driver on that road, I would give way that, okay, go ahead. It's in the public interest, it's in the best interest of the people. It's just a hooray. It's a great, great thing. So we're not conclusive. The committee must go through hearings and define this area. I've just tried to introduce it a little bit in terms of the thought. Because you might go to the legal interpretation, but the most important thing is the thought. What do we seek to do? What do we seek to do? There might be a natural disaster and the whole community is washed away or fire burnt down. And you want them to make an intervention. But these people, that community becomes number 10,000 down the queue. What do you do? So I'm saying I could not be conclusive there, but I attempted to really project what priority could mean. And in very objective term, priority would never mean a booty booty and zala mzala. I'm against corruption, I'm against nepotism, I'm against all sorts of unfairness. I'm fundamentally justice. I try to live up to that name of justice. So I was just talking to priority in my own terms. If somebody says, what did you think of priority and what do you understand priority to be? I would understand priority to be that which is in the best interest of justice and fairness. Not every time someone jumps the queue, though, is that it is so unjust and so unfair. Sometimes it's really to save a life. That's my point. The last time the doctor's car there, the plus is on their number plate. I no longer see those. Those are old enough. I'm throwing away my age now. The doctor's car there, the plus on their number plate, that was just to make an indication. Right? Just to make an indication. You always hope all the time this doctor is going to save some lives. They're just close to finishing late because I do know that all the substantive strategic matters have been dealt with. I don't know what else I need to introduce there now. Well, there's an issue about the Gazette in 2.1.
1-0. I don't say 2.10. You see, I've got some basics in mathematics. I don't say 2.10. Say 2.10. Now I can play with your legalities. So I'll play with my mathematics. Yeah. So 2.13 is also important. I had read it under the objects of the bill. So there it is. The clause 6 of the bill proposes an amendment to create two additional offenses, making it an offense to obstruct unduly influence. To mislead and to engage in any other conduct which is designed to prevent, compromise, or obstruct any claimant from pursuing his or her rights provided in the Act. And to be thereof, criminalizing the lodgement of a claim with the sole intention of defrauding the state. Hey, Abando out there, they really do all sorts of things to defraud the state. You find that on the social grant system. So many people are up and running, but the system is registered them as frail and whatnot. So here under the lens, as a broad portfolio, under the lens, we want to criminalize a deliberate intent to defraud the state and lodge a claim, a falsified claim, knowing deep down, I guess, the burden of proof and all those sorts of concepts to prove if there was any intention to. But that clause is put there so that there's no abuse of the system by anyone out there. But 2.14, I think, to the end, is really about them, to the last page, is really about the set up in the land claims court. Remember, land claims matters ultimately may end there. So you want to talk to the capacity of the land claims court. That's what I'm doing there. I'm talking to the capacity of the land claims court, allowing for judges to be at the same level. Otherwise, land claims court, all judges are going to run away from the land claims court if they seem to be not on par with their colleagues at the high court. So that's what allowing for vacancies in the questions are almost as Chief Justice. So the acting judge president, then I'm saying the most senior judge, in the absence of the acting judge president, the most senior judge would then come in to act. Right. I did consult the department at point three. That's point three. No, I'm just checking if there's anything else about now. That's point three. And the commission. The commission. Chief Land Claims Commissioner. Would you feel that justice can be done if we just let restitution be closed once and for all on 1998? Even with this 2014 one somewhere hanging, being frozen. So I did in principle make that consultation with the department. I'll end up with a note about the socio-economic impact assessment that two things about that. One, the rules of parliament do not provide for any member, an individual member, to do that. It's not likely that I now predict I'm sick with a sickness called visionary. It's not likely that in future the rules would require a member to do that, because that's a whole scale of research and whole of expertise. A member of parliament has got to have this vision and so forth, and is then assisted through the drafting process. So the rules do not even mention the word socio-economic impact that. I don't know why I'm mentioning this. I'm just showing that I'm not limited. So the rules do not make provision for that.
However, I did apply my mind to it. And I checked with the department if, in principle, the socio-economic impact study was done. Remember, it's a requirement. Let me just complete it. It's a requirement of EXCO to do the SEIA. It's a requirement of EXCO. Remember, in the separation of powers, Parliament is another platform. Executive is another platform. Judiciary is another platform. So it's a requirement of EXCO to do the SEIA. But in the legislative arm, we are not required to do it. But I thought, because I'm looking at anything that may again make this amendment of social tax to be nullified, I then applied my mind, and I submit, honorable members, that the same SEIA that was done by the department for 2014 would still be applicable. Would still be applicable. In terms of the financial, the socio-economic indicators, the impact, the water, it's still the same. It's basically what you had was an NCOP that didn't fulfill its obligation. So the socio-economic impact is still the same. I'm not required, I again say, but I was going an extra mile just to make sure that I'm not required, no other member in any other bill. I know Honorable Singh is going forward with the bill of the late Honorable Ambrose Singh. And I know that Honorable Singh may not be expected to really have the SEIA. Yeah. But it said there that the member is of the opinion that this bill must be dealt with according to the procedure established by Section 76 of the Constitution, since in a substantial manner falls. It in a substantial manner falls within the functional area of the indigenous law and customary law subject to Chapter 12 of the Constitution. I'm advised by Parliament that the bill has since been referred to the House of Traditional Leaders for an opinion that would be necessary under 76, right? I think 5.2 close off on that note. The bill pertains to customary law and should be pertain to customary law as well. It's not essentially about the price. It has implications to that arena of work. Should be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders, right? So Section 76 means NCOP up through to provinces, and also where I'm of the opinion that traditional leadership portfolio is affected, also referred to the House, and I have accordingly asked Parliament to refer. And it has been referred at the same breath that it has been referred to the committee. Now, honourable members, that is from where I sit, the good story. That's a good story that I have come to share with you. To say that our people have stood out, been locked out for the past year now. And no progress could be made about the applicants of 2014 up to now, that I have really had to take this initiative and a bold step. My name could easily drown with it where there are horrific flaws, but that there was best of intentions, and I'm very, very proud of those intentions. And I would thank the Honorable Minister to the extent that I knocked at his door to seek the result. He was always ready to help me despite his busy schedule with the information. I thank the CLCC whenever I came knocking at her door. She never tired in explaining to me the difference between settled and finalized.
You knocked at her door before sunset.
During tea time, I will outline to your satisfaction, honorable filters, that I don't get head in an appropriate manner. And she never tired to explain the difference between the settled. She even drilled the citation 42G, the minister approval 42G. That's a settled, so those that are settled. And then finalized, it means there's nothing outstanding, not even a cent. Every last square meter has been given back, or up to the last cent, then that is finalized.
to some extent, from my pure English, secondary, second and finalized mean the same thing, but now I'm wiser. They're not the same thing. Now Prof. Cousins is not listening to that. So he'll be very disappointed with a member in the portfolio who confuses the first thing meant with final thing from an academic point of view and professional point of view. Honourable member, thank you very much for your indulgence. I took somewhat long, but I think and I thought because we are on the record, we want to record, I thought I needed to talk to it. What reps is there in the legal formulation of this that I was outlining? Now, it's not so much my strong competence, it would be known, and I would neither feel it's a weakness either. I'm not a drafter, I'm a politician, political office bearer. I tried my best not to be influenced by party political things, but to really act in the interest of the public, everyone. President Linda is not here for the PAC to say whether I helped the Israeli to campaign on the PAC, but that was the intention, to really help everyone. Members, as you will discuss, I invite you to think deeply about the crisis regarding land out there. People are really going impatient. People are feeling that very little has been done in order to reform, to restitute, to transform land. And people are simply demanding land. And in comparative studies, now I'm risking letting my other people's terrain. In comparative studies, you would see that if people grow impatient, it goes up to a certain point. The case in point, for example, would be Zimbabwe. People then will get in now, take Zimbabwe to South Africa. And I'm not calling for that. I'm just being cautious of that. People will take Amabuto from Ekayelitsha, Ekayamnandi, elsewhere, and go into the farms in Stellenbosch and elsewhere. And food production in the country will go into crisis and into flames. There will be, there will be a demise in the economic front and everywhere else. There will be chaos. So I have thought in the best intentions that a step like this allows for a lawful process to make sure that the demand out there for land are met. Because if you close that boiling kettle, now again a little bit of chemistry on my part, close it, the lid, press it down, close the mouth of that kettle, if you are strong enough, then it's back. That is why it's ideal to always open. You see the people cooking, they always open the lid a little bit so that when it's boiling, the steam evaporates. So this is the idea, and this is the logic, this is the philosophy. This is an attempt at making sure that we all get a win-win. Lastly, the stakeholders who made submissions to me, those submissions will be forwarded to the committee so that when the committee entertains discussions and submissions, it also entertains those valuable submissions from our stakeholders absolutely. And then ultimately a view is taken. Having discussed with that, and Mr. Nguni has set aside in the chair to take the time now. The motion of desirability that, as the chair, I asked, that was item number 9, that it be deferred. It will then kick in after the stakeholders have been heard by the committee. But having said that, the first hand I'm going to ask procedurally, committee secretary, is the legal section of parliament to make a comment so that no committee can discuss beyond a certain point. If the legal section feels that we needed to wait for the department, or we needed to wait for the commissioner or MCO official there. So I'm saying, thank you so much. I'm so sorry. Thanks so much. I can see you supported me. I'm sorry, I don't know at what point the record broke, because I'm just also talking to the record. So the the next hand procedurally is then going to come from the legal of parliament to make comments. There are people who then certify under normal circumstances. They will then certify, but in a meeting situation, we will need that guarantee. Is this discussion necessary, or must we dispense and deal with other items? I'll give over to you, members. But before that, Honorable Susan, okay, you wanted to come before.
Yes.
Yes, let's have that.
Thank you, sir. I want to extend my apology for having a little late. I want to thank for this slander. Just two issues from the procedural perspective. My understanding is that you are chairing today's meeting. I want to propose that we elect or appoint somebody else to chair this stage of the proceedings. I noticed you've got the strike here who are still chairing Sports Portfolio Committee meetings. I think we'll be more comfortable when we raise our questions with you was when you are away from the chair. That's the first point. And the second point I want to put across the question is, now we're going to confine ourselves just to the memorandum. We're not dealing yet with the clauses of the bill at this point in time. I just don't want to speak ahead of my
yes. Thank you so much. There's another hand.
Chair, I hear what Member Fultani is saying. It is ideal, but at the same time, I think it's important that a member that was part of this committee chairs this meeting. I don't have any particular difficulty with you chairing. I think if we have a difficulty with the way you're chairing, we will raise it. So I would prefer a member of this committee that's involved with the land plans, see the reports, that be involved with some of the underlying issues that they're running this meeting. I think it's background knowledge that is crucial.
No problem.
Honourable Chairman.
Yeah, I think I second what the continued chair. And if we feel that you are not chairing very well, we will arrange for the day time.
No, fine. I'm flexible either way. I was just saying this meeting, the continuation of the meetings of the week, and there was the nomination and it was nominated. But at any point that members should feel that there is a need for objectivity, I think members should feel free to make that indication. I'll be more willing and I will nominate a member. It's like when the chair is usually there. So when she goes to the bathroom, I sit next to her, she usually says,
mm-hmm.
You know, because it's just a short period of time, you know, yeah. So at that point, if there's that feeling, but I am certain that we should not have a problem. I'm very, very certain that there can't be, yeah. Those were the hands. The Honorable Dizzy, on the question about the second
content.
The content, thank you.
Yeah.
Shall we deal with that? Once, let's get the clearance first, because the parliamentary legal section must first clear. I am aware from where I sit that there's a number of bills that fails to be clear. So why discuss only to find that we don't have clearance? So we have not conferred since legal service, and I don't know what she is going to say. I definitely do not know. You know, yeah, thank you. But then, Zizi, please note that
thank you, Chair. As the Chair has said, as the legislative drafting unit, we have drafted the bill and we are satisfied that it is in accordance with the international drafting standards. And we are also satisfied that the bill is constitutionally sound. We have issued a certification certificate to say that the bill is constitutional, it is not a money bill. It is not a bill that amends the constitution. It is a bill that should be proceeded on in terms of section 76 of the constitution. I think that's the only thing I would say for now, Chair. Thank you.
legal and certification issue fall under this non-tando because when I was speaking to Baleka, it's nice to be thinking about. I've learned that people take offense to ideas are wrong, like that is right. And the procedural issues, please, the committee secretary is going to deal with the procedural issues, right? Insofar as the bill, insofar as the mark, the motion, where, the referral to the house, or the, you know, all the procedural issues. The chief procedural officer is our committee secretary, insofar as that aspect. The content issue. Yeah, now, there's one question already on the floor, and I think that let's field a question. Zizi, the question, you don't even need to repeat it. The question is whether if members want to deal with the memo, or people want to deal with the actual phrase. Yes, thank you. There's that one question. Let's continue to field questions out of the members.
Chair, there's a couple of comments that I have. I think, first of all, let me first say that we respect the fact that you've been brought this private members bill to we respect the fact that you it's an urgent matter in South Africa, and most certainly as the DA support access to justice and effective redress to citizens of South Africa, people that suffered from discriminatory legislation in the past. In fact, our interest in this legislation is that it's done effectively, that we get our society deals, that there's a clarity for all South Africans going forward, that we do not have 120 years from now, we still sit with the same issue that we need to build a nation. I think land, both the symbolic and in the real terms, resolving that in South Africa is going to be a key step in improving the future. So we support the sentiment, we support the urgency, and I think you respect the fact that you took the initiative to bring this to the fore. What we are concerned about is there's a difference between taking legislation that was passed in 2014 and then essentially reworded and submitted again. And really looking at the issue of restitution of land rights and how it can be resolved. And one of the concerns that we have is that this is actually an opportunity, legislation like this is an opportunity to really deal with the kind of matters that we've been dealing with in this committee. For example, lack of capacity, lack of budget. We saw a presentation yesterday that the department, in real terms, this is a department whose budget is decreasing. Are we dealing with, there was in fact with the previous legislation, as you said yourself, socioeconomic impact was considered and it should still be applicable. One of the comments, and it was never disputed in this committee, we actually raised it a number of times at the DA, it was never counteracted, it was never said to us, well, here's extra budget, here's extra institutions, this is how we're going to do it better. There was a socio-economic impact study that said the reopening of land claims in this manner, take note what I'm saying, I'm not saying we're against the reopening of land claims, but in terms of this particular framework, will take 120 years to resolve. Now, our concern is not so much the intention behind this proposed legislation, but that we don't believe it necessarily deals with the underlying issues in restitution that currently delays the resolving of land claims. We're still sitting, 20 years after land claims were first submitted, we're still debating land claims that have not been resolved. So my question here to you is, to what extent is this fresh legislation? To what extent is this open to complete rewording? In fact, we would like to have an entirely fresh look at this, come up with good legislation that really takes the country forward, that we're not 20 years from now having another amendment act on an amendment act and dealing with claims that have not been resolved. To what extent is this a flawed in many respects. And to what extent is this opportunity to fundamentally look at the problems in land claims, fundamentally come up with legislation that provides the institutions, provides the processes, and I also believe the kind of confidence process that give our citizens confidence that the matter has been dealt with. That's my first question. Incidentally, some of our previous concerns when this first appeared in Parliament in 2014, the issue of resolving of poll claims, that we believe have been addressed in your private members' bill. There are also issues of, as we said at the time, unfunded mandate, communication, institutions that need to be created. We also look at this in the backdrop of a national development plan that was referred to, land district committees, that sets up an institutional framework around land reform. And how does this match up? Is this legislation that's operating in silos, given what else is happening in land reform, how does it align? So the chair, we're not playing games here. I think we all share in this committee the dedication to justice. The question here is whether this is the best vehicle to achieve that justice that we want. And chair, and really, our preference is actually for entirely fresh legislation where we meet, we get together, we rework, we honestly look at all the concerns in land reform and come up with legislation that will stand the test of time. That's our interest. And as we stand here, we are actually in two minds, whether this is desirable or not, and whether it shouldn't actually be an entirely fresh piece of legislation or not. Thanks.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much, Honourable Sita.
Let me start off by saying we appreciate the initiative that you have taken, Honourable. Oh, that was not meant to be off the record. So let me repeat my statement. We appreciate the initiative that you have taken, and indeed to us you have been quite transparent. You indicated that you were coming up with it, but you wanted to be sure that you've covered all corners from which to start, and finally it is here. It's been a motivating reason for me to be here rather than to do public works today. I had a tough choice. We've been dealing with the annual report there, and here is the new bill, and Paula has been very much instrumental, literally putting pressure on me. So there's a bill on the table, so you must come here. So when I left this London at 8 o'clock, I was not sure whether I go to public works or I send an SMS mail. What are we doing and where do we sit? So she has really assisted me to be part of this. Let's just come to some things that I would like to get clarity on. And who carries the cost of processing a private member's bill? It may be such an obvious, there may be such an obvious answer, but for me, the rookie MP, that is a critical question. Because the processing itself, upon thinking about the stage where we would need to do private debt, you know, public hearings and, you know, and all that, you know. That's why I'm raising this question. I would want to get the department's take at this point in time as we're dealing with the memorandum. But we have an idea as to how the department feels, you know, about, I'm not talking about a commitment of support, but just how they feel about it. And the reason, Honorable Minister, through you, Chair, yes. I would like to get a, you know, an indication of how you feel is because we already have here that 2014 Act. And the motivation apparently arises out of the fact that the Act has been effectively nullified. Now, therefore, my major concern here, besides the other one, there are two major concerns. The first one is about whether we should look at this as a substitution of that Act coming through this avenue, just because that Act has been effectively nullified by the Constitutional Court. That's why for me it's critical that we get your take, you know, on this. We've got an Act that was passed, processed, and then do we look at this as a substitute, you know, of the 2014, you know, act? And now, the second major concern here is whether, which is not been specific, whether you would accommodate claims on land that was taken before 1913. I've got a very, very clear position when it comes to the expropriation deal of public lands around 1913, 1932. How do you provide for that? I know it's a critical constitutional issue, you know, but I would like to know what your take is, because you have not been specific on that, unless there's something that escaped my mental attention. Now, coming to page 9, 2.8, second line, or referral to the court of old cases. Why do you want to involve the court? I'm not quite comfortable about it, that's why I'm questioning. Why do you involve the court? And who do you anticipate would need to approach the court? Page 9, 2.8 of second line.
Thank you.
It starts with finalization.
So
my question is, all referral to the court of old cases, of all old cases, why do you involve the court in that aspect? And who do you expect to want or to need to approach the court? Then on same page, 2.14, right at the bottom. Now my question, and that also applies to 2.15 on the next page, is this proposal about judges, okay? Is this in the light, are we, as this department, as this committee, is this our competency? Or is it not the competency of the Department of Justice? I'm aware you talked about the lending, but the personnel that sit in that court, that constitute that court, is it for us to call the shot to say fill in those gaps? Is it not for justice with us just indicating to them that no? Let's say public works would say, I've elected courts, but it's not for me to tell you who to appoint. I've elected schools, but it's not for me to tell you how many teachers should be there and what their qualifications should be. When you applied for a school site and building, you told me that you wanted to use the facility for teaching. So I'm saying, is this our call, or should it not be the call of the Department of Justice? And this question about the socioeconomic impact, I appreciate the fact that my colleague, you know, has raised it. And I want us to give ourselves time to really interrogate it deeply about. I know that you said you have not necessarily included this. But I think for us to have comfort that this will have the desired socioeconomic impact. I think it needs to be, you need to be specific, including, because now if it's not included in the draft, in the memorandum, or anywhere, then we may find it a little bit difficult to actually go on record as having said that we're comfortable with what you have done, or with the fact that it said there has been no written results or process that has been done. Remember, as I've often said, the only reason why this institution called government exists is to bring about a social balance. So every move we make, every cent budget that we pass, the the acid test, if not the only test, is what is it going to be, what is it going to, how is it going to touch the social lives of the people. So anything that we do in Parliament, which doesn't refer to that, we're almost irrelevant. So I would urge you to find it wise for you to actually put it down as to what your intentions are about that. Just on a lighter note, in support of that, as MPs, remember, Honorable Chair, we are free to ask any funny, silly, simple question. So, so we'll still ask you about socioeconomic impact, even if it's not in the amendment. So that's my 2 cents worth of input. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Speaker. The only other hand now, Honorable Waters, and then we file responses. Honorable Waters, while you come in, we'll ask Honorable Minister and Department to just make a comment. Similarly, CNCC, I know I'm not saying Minister and CNCC are different bodies, but practically speaking, yeah. Just for some comments, you know, just for some comments. Because what the committee will then have to say must happen going forward would be also informed by your take, you know, as well. I will note Honorable Chabaleng, after Honorable Walter, Honorable Chabaleng, and then Honorable Mandela. We will close it there for today, colleagues, simply because of time. I made an undertaking to Honorable Chabaleng that he will get his 2 o'clock flight, meaning by about 12 or shortly thereafter we should be out of here. Say there will still be another big item, but we will try and manage to target it. Honorable Waters.
Chair, I've successfully managed to lobby my own meeting to be postponed, so I'm hoping to successfully on the long term. Chair, I think it might also be useful to because this is an amendment on existing legislation. I'm not convinced that we shouldn't look freshly at the original legislation and then come up with a comprehensive set of amendments that goes further than this. Quite possibly it might go beyond this committee as well. If we're going to really let our cause go wider than what's been proposed here. So just to reaffirm, the DA is in favour of a comprehensive look at the regional legislation in order to ensure a rapid and effective delivery of justice. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm guessing that you are also in from the same room.
You want a radical economic transformation.
Yeah. When I raised my hand first, I was going to comment on what they said to me about that it's taking a long time.
Under 20 years.
I was going to say it doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as it's done. It's not going to be easy. People who fought for freedom, when they decided that they were to believe the 56 was bringing freedom in our lifetime, that was their slogan. And they never saw this through. And then others fought on. More than 30, 40 years later, we got our freedom. So even if it takes 100 years to get to the end to be returned to those who were successful to end what they was. Why should we have? If we can make it faster, it's okay. But if it takes longer, the next generation will think this is not the end of the country. We make laws, we amend them, conditions changes, we do amendments again. That's what Parliament is all about. So let's soldier on. I was going to be worried if, for instance, the Parliament would say that if the lawyer, if they would say that no, we are out of sync or we are out of tune with the Constitution, we are maybe with the we are looking at this left or whatever section instead of this and that. But we are all together. So, and I just wanted to check against
do as we did with all other amendments, including even taking all paragraphs out and putting the new paragraphs with new clauses. So nothing stops us. If we agree that we're discussing this thing is available, then sure. Let us do it, and then we'll debate and make amendments. And when we debate and make amendments, we can even change this whole thing if we come up with something else. Totally different from the clauses that are suggested to make them discussion and consensus. I'm happy that we are agreed that it is available and that it is in line with the with the constitution of the country and provisions of government.
Thank you. I had noted Honourable Martel. I'll then come back to Honourable Walter. The Honourable members may wish or tempted to be in the debating mode as we usually do in the committee, but I think we still have a whole time ahead with crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I will allow. Let's have the last one, Honourable Walter.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I wanted to respond to the initial remarks by the Honourable Walters. I think his passion indicates starting fresh, but I wanted to remind him we are actually here to do as the Constitutional Court has instructed us to do. Memory serves me correct that the Constitution Court did give an opportunity to come back within a specific time to either indicate whether those things that have been identified has been corrected, because as you have indicated, Chair, earlier, there were a number of things that the Constitutional Court find one thing. One was the issue of participation, and the other one, as you indicated, related to the definition of prior authorization in relation. Those are the two things. But I understand my recollection is there is a specific time where the Constitutional Court has said there should be reported back around the 15 months. So essentially, we cannot speak about a fresh piece of legislation because this one builds on the original Act of 1994. That kind of thing. Yes, I think the other strategic issue that has been raised by Honourable Walters in relation to the cost implications, the issue that Honourable Fultani has raised, the question. Which I was actually reading into it. It actually goes asking the question about what about the pre 1913 those would be very, very important, but those may be the golden blocks of a different legislation, if not this one. As I said, my understanding is here we need to. Deal with the issue that has been raised by the Constitutional Court Chair. And as we looked at the prior members' door, Honourable Bloomley clearly speaks to most of those issues that have been found wanting. So I'm saying we, because as you correctly said, that we are part of Parliament. So if one house has been found wanting, it means us. Also on this particular side. But it would have been good if the minister or CLCC could have indicated to our executive or request our members to exactly what are the kinds of key things that we were expecting to tighten up thank you very much.
Chairperson, I think there's one thing that we agreed on in the committee, and that is that land claims and issue, or at least historical injustices need to be addressed. There's clearly disagreement as to how it should be addressed. Now, as I said, this particular legislation, if I take what Emma Mandela was saying just now, I regard a legislation like this as an opportunity to go far further than fixing a mess in previous legislation as pointed out by the Constitutional Court. When a ship is sinking, you don't push your fingers into the hole. You have to look at whether the ship itself is properly afloat and going in the right direction. So our position, and I want to be clear on that as well, we support a re-look at the legislation. In fact, the 94 legislation, we would like to have a comprehensive look at given the experiences of the last 23 years. We support an approach that most certainly will not take us 120 years. I think I appreciate Member Chavaleng's dedication that, climb a mountain regardless of how high it is. But you don't climb a mountain taking 10 times the amount of time that you need to climb it if you do it in a better way. I think we must have an open mind with this, and I want to restate what I said right in the beginning. We currently do not know, given what we're hearing here. On one hand, we are hearing that let's have a proper look at legislation affecting land claims. On the other hand, we hear that this is something we have to fix to in terms of constitutional court application. Still doesn't address our original concerns that were raised around the 2014 legislation. So our position, I think there's going to be a motion now in terms of desirability. I actually think it might be worthwhile to discuss it more in depth with less time constraints in the committee at a later stage. If there's going to be a motion for desirability, then given what we're hearing at the moment, given the lack of clarity as to the scope that we have here in terms of looking at the legislation and properly dealing with it, the DA then abstains from such a vote. If there's going to be a vote now, because I don't believe we properly thrashed out to what extent does this represent a fundamental effect that what we need to do. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I will just feel the team, to an extent we have seen where there are constitutional issues for me, and system where there are legal issues, and then I will fly with the rest. Thank you.
On the issue of the motion that we have raised, the motion of the resolution was raised to the next speaker. So, the motion of the resolution is not on paper today because the rule 286, subsection 4, I and J, provides after due deliberation, must consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the case. Therefore, it means the committee must first engage with all the relevant stakeholders to public participation, and then before we can deal with clause by clause of the case, then we table the motion of desirability.
Point in limine, what you say, in law? I thought men would know.
I think there are only two questions that I'd like to answer. The first one is who pays for private members' bills? Our parliament pays for all private members' bills. The private member doesn't pay any cost for a private member's bill because it's a constitutional right of parliament. So by nature of a member being a member of parliament, he is allowed to take your benefits from parliament. And the other question that I think I should answer is the one about the judges, whether this committee has competency to deal with the judges appointed in the Land Claims Court. Land Claims Court is established by the Restitution of Land Rights Act, which is the act that we amended. So this committee has a right to amend this act, and Land Claims Court is the affirmative judges. like the, for instance, the labor court, which is not dealt with by the Department of Justice, but because it's established under the Labor Relations Act. So the Committee on Labor would deal with the labor court. Thank you.
I'm not going to say that was there. All of his done is a watchdog on such issues. We just,
this is society, this religion society.
Thank you very much, honorable members. And also thank you so much to the team for the. I think after I have outlined what I think are some responses, I'm just going to ask the honorable minister and the commissioner for a reflection, snap reflection, yeah. And then we'll be done with the item. Honorable Waters, I then retorted that you really seek a radical economic transformation, in that you're really talking about how we can overhaul the system. You are right. I did pick up, I think it was HSRC that said it will take 144 years, not even 120 years, 144 years. So I agree with your departure point, absolutely. And I am seriously concerned. Clearly, we will not even be raised, excuse my language, we will not even be marbles. We would really be soiled by then. We will be soiled. Literally, we would at this current thing. So I agree firmly and from your window. I agree with your window. But HSRC was talking about the whole of land reform, not restitution per se. So that's the part in our notes that I thought we needed just to consolidate. Yeah, it's the whole of land reform and what land really is actually, yeah. Not restitution in isolation. I'm open to further engagement because it's a nice intellectual debate. What are you talking about?
The reason I wouldn't consider that yet, that's more.
There were questions.
Yeah.
Can I just hear the opinion of the committee? Madam Chabalin is suggesting that we move now. We don't necessarily entertain the questions that we raised. His merit in my trying to read his mind is that we will be having all the time ahead to be interacting. But I'm testing the feeling of the committee on that.
The person presenting this to me was for us to have some quick bites, so to speak. That's what the memorandum. And I suggest we stick with that. To finality, then we move on to the next level of the process. I still do not find any reason why we must not deal with that right. Minister may not necessarily be present, you know, on a given day when we deliver it to him. Thank you.
No, thank you. Shall we just do this? I'll be quick with the presentation. I'm mindful it was quite long, Honorable Chair. But I'll be quick with the response.
Yes.
So my point was that the what HSRC was referring to, I thought it means the whole land reform program, all of it, including everything, put in one bucket. That is what's running very slow to take out for 44 years. But restitution itself, I do not think it's been evaluated thoroughly to conclusive. Reason being, some people opt for money. So how would you weigh land versus money? How would you put that all together? What is the model, you know? Again, I risk abusing the professor in our midst in that it's then the area of inquiry and research to really look at that. So it was the whole portfolio of plans that HFRC was talking about. And I agree with the concern entirely. We can't take out the portfolio. We've got to take far, far, far less. If we can say lifetime, then at least the next generation, cutting it to about 40 years. That would be that. But it's open to discussion in the bill, whatever this policy discussion and interface on the water, in the bill, it will not necessarily, in fact, the reopening assists reducing that period of time, because as things stand, claimants are just outside the system, but with the reopening, claimants will be inside the system, and then we come with a time frame, but like I'm saying, it will be variable, anything about 40 years, nothing beyond that. So from that 124, you cut out the 100 years. Right. Capacity and budget, Honorable Walters, I agree, but I had thought that maybe ongoing amendments, because this must not be the final amendment, there must be further amendments. So ongoing amendments would then deal with the issues of capacity, the issues of budget, including all other sorts of lobbies, because budget is not our competence directly. Openness to rewording. I'm sponsoring an idea that I'm more than willing. Now I'm on a good drive gear. You know, in an automatic, once you put the gear drive, I'm on a good gear of drive. So after this amendment, I'm more than willing. We can jointly propose a committee bill, if you like. That seeks to, or even under your name, to support it if we think that we have an agreement on the principles, the policy issues to be contained there. A turnaround for the better, you know. I think we need to agree that a turnaround that doesn't maintain the status quo and privilege, but seeks to really be redistributive and empowering. So I think let's look at that, and I invite my colleagues to really, from this lesson of today, if we go through, to really look at initiating the bills that will take us, that will fast track. Right. The processing contract. It's not really a substitution of the 2014 piece. It's not really a substitution of the 2014 piece. But the principles seem to be overlapping a bit. The 5-year was proposed there, the 5-year I'm proposing. The reopening of restitution claims was proposed there, I am proposing the reopening of restitution claims. What else? There are similarities, but I guess they would also be disjunctures. There it was mentioned up until 2019. I do not mention up until when, I just say 5-year window period. Because I'm weary of the time the president assents to in 2019 or 2020, and then I would have tied down 2017 up to 2022, only to find the left with 2 years. So there is some evening thought, therefore, I think I would differ with the 2014, because it puts down, instead of a period, it puts down a year. And now, certain things happen that delay what could have happened by that year. So it's not a replica of 2014. It was never meant to be. But it would be naive also. I like to hold my head high. I would never like to be a kind of pseudo intellectual who just by this an academic, they call it copy as it is and plagiarism, thank you. I wouldn't like to plagiarize 2014 by any means. I would love this bill to pass, and I would love to be answerable for any thought behind it, and not really just cut and paste. There might be a lot of overlaps. And from drafting point of view, I was not necessarily drafting. I would give the thought to the drafter. From drafting point of view, they could feel that a certain formulation by 2014 is worth retaining, and therefore feel like putting it verbatim, but I also know that drafters, being professionals, will be very weary of their integrity being like a plagiarism. You know? So the 2014 versus 2017 is a very interesting point that you have, Walter. But I originated a thought. I originated a thought on that. The pre-1913, I think it's raised by it's a constitutional question, Sebas. I insisted earlier on that time in Mbuni. You know, Mbuni, his father was closer to whatever, go to this amazing time. I don't know. But I would love to go back as far as possible. But I am limited by the reality. Mbuni, do you want your people to claim? Yes. Now, if you want to go back, how far back, and the philosophical and the theoretical about trying to find the you know, grappling with the shifting sands there. So that's the issue. So I answered in my formulation by proposing that further bills need to be initiated. Exactly in that area of pre-1913. Exactly in that area. There were a lot of personal reflections as I was thinking through that, because where do you start? Now, according to Christians, the year now is 2017, so the world has been in existence for about 2017, 2000 years, and some few years before that, we call it BC. But maybe from where I sit, there has always been the world from Pangea and then Laurasia, Gondwanaland, and all the scientific world. And therefore, how far back do you go? Who came from where, when? Do you go to 1652? Pre-1652, if there were wars there among the original people inhabiting. So, and then what evidence and all that. So I limited myself, Honorable Member, to 1913, because 1913 carries the national consensus hitherto. In ideological terms, I could be accused of being a reformist and shallow. But I thought that while you open it, you can then unfold the debate. You know, this could be a stepping stone to further engagement, right? I'm just saying, so pre-1913, I think let us think carefully and go deep. Everyone, including Commission, including Honorable Minister, including the NGOs out there, the academia, what do you do? What proposition can you give pre-1913? But if while you're thinking through that, people may not lodge claims, then we have a problem. Then we have a problem. But people must lodge claims so long and so long. Let's discuss the starting point of 1913. The question about the judges has been answered. The 2.8 was. Reference to court, yes, thank you. But I have to be telling you in answer to that. It's in terms of, yeah, I said the existing framework. It's in terms of the existing framework, in the existing framework, matters either end up via finalization, beyond finalization, then there's a court. That's why there's an established land claims court. So the thought that I was carrying through was just the thought of utilizing the existing space. So that's the existing situation. It may be radically altered, so many options. If you convert this commission into a Chapter 9 institution, for instance, probably we'll then not need the court, because then the buck will stop with the commission, full stop. And a committee of parliament would have to implement the recommendations and note and support the recommendations of the. So the scenarios are beyond what you have. In the conjuncture, you can only end up with finalization. If there's no finalization in the conjuncture, anyone can go to the land claims court, right? I request all the members of the compromise position that we, without suppressing, but we step aside now in terms of the question. We will have plus minus before Concord deadline, which is in another 10 months time. We'll have that 10 months to ourselves, I will no longer be having authority of having initiated anything. Once it's referred to the committee, for now I really had to brief the committee. But beyond today, it's yours to really discuss and turn around and rearrange and all that, right? And I would have no authority to say, no, my thought was this. No, no, no. It will be up to the committee to guide it. But however, Honorable Minister, the CLCC, Chief Land Claims Commission, people like the when it's chapter 9, you'll be like Chief Justice Mokoni Mokoni. I will ask or invite your good self to just have a snap take on this as you get it now. Thank you. I had asked my office to favor you with copies a little bit much earlier than, I think before the referral. I don't know if you have had time and what are some of your off-the-cuff comments. Thank you. But also feel free on desirability. Although this seems to pass the legal muster, if undesirable from the execution point of view, this is undesirable, it's giving more work, then you feel free to, so that the committee making it can be so informed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, to members, the Minister, for his presence. Thank you for the opportunity. I think from our side as the Commission of Constitutional Land Rights, we just wanted to briefly comment by saying that the Restitution Act emanates from Section 25. For us, it's imperative that we are given tools to be able to implement and perpetrate. So, as you are aware, we've got new claims, and that's 163,000 claims that were received during the 2014-2015 window. And therefore, what we would be looking for would be that the committee then through the private members will allow us an opportunity so that we're able to get a tool that will allow us to research and settle our claims. And I think that at this point in time, we also want to make sure that we comply with the Constitutional Court judgment, which says that clear guidance must be given in terms of how we need to move forward within the clear period. So I think that for now I will leave it at that, just to say that our interest is to ensure that we are given the necessary tools to be able to settle the claims, both the new and the old.
Thank you, sir. Honorable.
People said we were removed that when we met with me, we lodged the claims on behalf of these other deacons. And now we are back on the land, they are out there. They said, we think that justice is not being achieved. And they said, in order for justice to be achieved, let's reopen so that these people who did not claim for whatever reason, would be given an opportunity to claim so that they could join us. And together we could enjoy what was taken away from us in one respect. So that's broadly what is important about this bill, the chair for us, is that we will be able to fulfill the of the people, particularly those who we met with. I remember that in one meeting there's 1,260. The majority of them were people who had received their land, but they were worried about the others who gave them the list but did not get back because they couldn't get back the land for them because they didn't claim. So, Chair, thanks very much for doing this. We appreciate this.
Thank you so much, Father. CLCC and Minister, may you, I did not ask you beforehand for this, but may you briefly again comment on the social economic impact assessment? Is it there? Had you done it before? Because my view is that's a short period of time, it would be relevant if it's somewhere in your shelves.
It was done. Yeah. As to whether, you know, with the outcome of this process now, we can check for it. I think it will be fair to do so. Thank you.
Honourable committee members, we in fact the SEIA part is a nice grey area, but we can, because it's a competence of the executive, if required to be revised, we can, as committee now, we can ask the department to revise the SEIA, align it to the amendment. So that's only fair and decent advice. Right. Including where does the financial education get in their colleagues in the treasury. Yes. Thank you very much. The item is dispensed with. And through the committee and myself as group anyway, we will update the chair on the discussion on this matter and how far it has gone. Now, going forward, obviously, it's one of the bills the city. I am aware that the department is also finalizing or doing some past hearings on other bills to come before committee. So I can predict that next year, remember, we are doing CPAs now, Communal Property Association Amendments. And we are left with the Gauteng and Mpumalanga, and then the committee will then decide on the desirability, and then it goes to the House and NCOP and so forth. Then there's this as well, that's coming up also. Clearly between now, I don't know, committee secretary will be looking at notice six and practicalities there. But I do know that we have 10 months to really, all of us say, we've done the process and Concord, we are here with us. Right. My dear stakeholders who made submissions when it was still at the draft stage, your submissions will be, I know Chamber of Mines, will be referred to the committee, they will be part of the deliberation of the committee. You might be specifically invited, please tell your principal. You might be specifically invited to the committee when it concludes what is called stakeholder hearings, when the big bodies will then be called to come and talk to the committee, perhaps after it's coming from public hearing. So clearly, there's no way you are prejudiced. In fact, you will positively influence the process in terms of discussion. Also, with the benefit of having listened to the deliberations now. The deliberations of the committee are open through and through, except where the chair so rules because of the requirements. So the bill, the committee has now been briefed, is to the committee secretariat and the permanent chair to
to now program it for public hearing and so forth. Thank you. We're conferring that there might be a necessity to have some slight extension of time, but that the committee will assess as we go and then refer, probably via commission, refer a request to Concord to maybe extend that timeline, it means by further 3 months. The NCOPN provinces process is the one that's more tedious. Our hearings are usually full to capacity, very, very active since I joined committee in 2014. Stakeholders are always there in big numbers, people tuned up about the issues. I don't know what happens at NCOPN provinces, so we will really have to, with respect, Honorable Minister, with respect to our colleagues at NCOP, we'll really have just to safely walk them through to make sure that this time around, again, the process is not created under the NCOP name. It's only 45 NCOP members for the whole of what the state is doing, so I can imagine that they are pretty common. So a member there has about 6 or 7 committees. The issue is rested, and once again, thank you to those particular stakeholders. There's still another land-related briefing by the minister. It is open. We invite people to please benefit from it as well, those who can afford to remain. Those who are interested specifically in the restitution only, they can. But we expect it to be a short one. It's just going to be a 15-minute talk by the minister, and maybe some interactions for another 15 minutes, and we'll send all the out of here. It is an important meeting. We requested as a committee that the value are general, because this issue in the land activism that talks about, this issue that talks about willing seller, willing buyer now, department introduced the office of the valuer general. So we would like the minister to talk to the issue about the performance of the valuer general. It may talk to some trends in the state. Professor Ben Cousins, thank you very much, sir, for having taken some time. We hope that your PhD and other students were not prejudiced while you were here. We are extremely privileged to have you. We know about your work. I may not have been putting the face to the name. At some stage, Deputy Minister Jeremy Cronin said to me, look at this. He's right. He's that was Deputy Minister Cronin saying, these are the issues we should be looking at. And you remind me of my lecturer, maybe it was your colleague, Dr. Anthony Holliday, who was at UWC, came to me at SRC office, recruited me to go and join philosophy. I didn't. Next time I ask about Anthony Holliday, yes, he passed on. Thank you, continue the good work. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I have submitted a request. I did the 12th. I'm here because of respect for the police. She's here to fetch me now because it's no briefing. It's information.
All right.
Please, that if you will allow me to leave, then I leave. You've got the document.
We have.
It tells you exactly
what.
Look at page 2. Thank you very much, sir. Next time when we're standing in front.
Thank you so much, Minister. We still appreciate it.
Yes,
jump, Minister. Why did you come to me? I think you are the wrong one. No, I'm just trying to summarize the whole meeting. The Minister is asking us to make benefit of this event. The aspects are 79 properties were acquired, and these are excluding the 6 RRR. A total of 804 million is that video? Thank you. Million was asked by the seller. Now, and it's still a big one of billion, big one of trillion. So I sympathize with somebody who has them for a food. An estimated amount of the 628 was paid for the 9. When seller owner remember, just to make sense of this, the seller had asked 804, but I say we paid 629. So 25% saving was made, which means an estimated 176 million was saved through the services of the Valuer General. In fact, it was 21.94% that was actually saved. So from where we should sit as members of this portfolio and land activists, it's quite impressive that this tool which we arranged, one year we started with 2 million to establish the OVG. It's now beginning to save the state. It's quite a fortune. If so many farms that will be bought with or properties or land distribution programs that can be unfolded from that budget. I know provincial department of transport colleagues have that budget exactly in the whole year. So this is the savings by the OVG. But they must save more. CLCC, please convey to the minister and others. They must save more. You know the shop called Save More? The point 8 was the comments by CLCC, which we have already filled in. Point 4 was comments by Minister, which we have already filled in. Point 4 was a presentation by that Bonichet, which he did and he jumped out. We the motion of desirability was then set aside for the relevant time. I take the opportunity, honorable members, the stakeholders, Chamber of Mines. Yeah, you own the mines. We need to do something there. We want to thank you for attending the meeting. All members of the media, there was Mr. Hammond, but I know he's a prominent journalist at News 24, was here, all other people, the professional team in attendance. Thank you very much. The Alliance for Rural Democracy. Yes, thank you. You will still be open to also make submissions. I can't remember getting your permission. You still be open. Public participation, I think it's in very, very good spirit. You still have to have your voice, including critical submission. You don't want people who just flow in there with the, you know. So the process will now be with the committee. It is what I call stakeholders. Like I said to Chamber of Mines, probably you still be allowed space to interface with the process. Right. But I may just indicate, when we do public hearings, we usually get people whose bodies are still going to make submissions, making submissions at that level, and they risk contradicting what the central body will say. Then sometimes I'm telling what the chair is telling, I say, is that the opinion, the formal submission by your body? The person said, I speak on behalf of such and such, and then say, no, it's my personal, so I'm just saying, stakeholder, mind your constituents when we go to public hearings, because sometimes the submissions might just really not talk to the same spirit or level. But thank you very much for coming to the legal drafting session. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that you came to me. You almost ground this meeting to a halt. If you just said a constitutional query and other, then we would have had called this meeting off long time. Thank you again, honorable members, everyone. Coming to support. Thank you so much. Dr. Manel, you saw Prof. Cousins was here. You came to oversee if you're doing well or you should take away that title. everyone has stayed in the meeting is adjourned. Help yourself, there's some canned or food drinks. If you don't get them, come to me.
So that's the good thing in the application.